have a presentation by me, Ellie Sheba Young.
All right, so good afternoon again. My name is Ellie Sheba Young, and I work I'm a master's student right now at North Carolina State University. I am in the horticulture department under Dr. Hamidish Rafi and the Blueberry Genomics Lab. And today I'm going to talk with you about single nucleotide polymorphic SNP marker discovery in a diverse panel of vaccinium species. So before I get started, I wanted to go ahead and acknowledge my team here. So I wanted to acknowledge the Ashrafi Lab, including Ashley Yao, Lauren Redpath, Terry Bland, Jessica Spencer, and also Jim Ballington, who is a professor emeritus at NC State, and also Dr. Paul Manos at Duke, who did a lot of work to help us find these different accessions and use them in our project. And also, I would like to say thank the NC State Genomic Sequencing Lab, the NC State Department of Horticultural Science, and the NC State Ag Foundation for my graduate assistantship, as well as the North Carolina Blueberry Council. So let's get started. So I want to talk to you a little bit about what is blueberry, in case you all do not know. So blueberries are members of the Ericaceae family. These are flowering plants. They can be bushes, usually found in acidic and kind of harsh soils. Blueberries include several different genera and subsections, which I will get into a little later. They have multiple ploidy levels. And the in North Carolina, the southern high bush blueberries are very widely used. They actually bring in an estimated $70 million farm gate value annually. So this is the very high value crop that we have in North Carolina. Is blueberries, in addition to being delicious, have various helpful components like flavonoids and anthocyanins, and these can be used to help combat cardiovascular disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, diabetes, and even cancers. So the objective of my project is to use next-generation sequencing to determine the ancestry and relationship between 29 wild and cultivated blueberry accessions. So I'm going to go into these a little later, but as you can see, not all blueberries are created equal. They're very different. A lot of them, of course, especially when you go into the wild, they kind of look a little different from what you're used to. So as far as the diversity panel that we are using, they're coming from six sections, including Cyanococcus, Bododendron, Herptothamnus, Hermimyrtilus, Pixithamnus, and Polycodium. The Cyanococcus is one that we use a lot because it includes the Vaccinium corymbosum in it, and as well as these other species, Vaccinium caesariensis, Darrowi, all of these are often introgressed into the Vaccinium corymbosum cultivars that we have in North Carolina. Like I mentioned earlier, we have these species can be in several different ploidy levels, including diploid, tetraploid, and hexaploid, just to name some of them. And again, Vaccinium corymbosum, which is something we use in North Carolina, this one is actually tetraploid, and we actually use three different types of corymbosum in this accession panel. And we try to use more than one of these different species when possible, especially some of the ones that we use at North Carolina State breeding programs. So going back to this, looking at the different wild and cultivated accessions, I wanted to show you that, you know, how diverse they are. This is a Vaccinium darrowi, which you can see is this nice like pink color. The berries are kind of deeper into the plant, so it's not very easy to pick. We have Arboreum, which is like arbol, it's a tree. It's not a tree, but it's very tree-like, a very large plant with very dark berries. We have Reveille, which is a farmer berry, which was used at one point for mechanical harvesting. And then we have Arlen, which is a little bit of a late bloomer. These pictures were taken at the same time, and that's why these are not yet ripe. So we have Virgatum is another one. This is a hexaploid. Angustifolium, which is found in the wild here. This is what their berries look like. So a little bit about the blueberry breeding history here. In 1908, the U.S. blueberry breeding program began with Francis Cobble and Elizabeth White. And in the 1930s, the USDA joined our cooperative breeding efforts with blueberries. And in the 1950s, the program at NC State actually began. Now, around the 80s, people started using different genetic markers for cereals and solanacea crops. And that brings us now to 2018. Do we have any blueberry markers that we can use? The answer, no. So we are working to do that. So it could be a little easier. Now, why are these markers necessary? So blueberry cultivars are the product of intraspecific hybridization and lots of backcrossing. So if you look at an example here like Reveille and Arlen, which are two cultivars we have, if you look at their background, it's very complicated. Different species introgressing and all that, well, different cultivars introgressing. And we have another plant, O'Neill, which has like three different species in its background. So it's very necessary to start developing some markers for fruit quality related traits to make breeding a little easier. Now, without this, as it seems, it is very, very time and labor intensive. It can take up to like 15 to 20 years to actually release a cultivar. And this becomes even more difficult when there are multiple ploidy levels. And like I said, there's widespread hybridization, and we have lots of unknown fruit quality related genetic traits and these wild accessions in a lot of these cultivated plants that we have. So the goal here is to develop superior quality berries through marker assisted selection. And we would like to use molecular markers to significantly reduce the time from crosses to cultivar release. And like I said, currently there are no fruit quality related markers identified in blueberries. So once we get these markers, we would like to be able to do QTL analysis to kind of get a sense of what genes are involved in certain specific traits like firmness, sweetness, things of this nature. So to give you an idea of the type of accessions that we picked, they're from all over the United States on the East Coast, as well as other parts of the world, which I'll show you later. Now in the United States, I'll just bring your attention to a few of them. We have W8520, which is Vaccinium cesariense, which we use as our reference genome. This was cultivated in New Jersey. We have O'Neill, which we're currently working on as a reference genome. This is one of our Vaccinium corymbosums, and this was developed here, but back in my home, in Raleigh, North Carolina, including, in addition to Reveille, Arlen, O'Neill, and Premier. All right. So as far as across the globe, we also have some species from Costa Rica, Vaccinium consanguineum. We have some from the Azores, Cylindraceum, and even some species from the Republic of Georgia, which is Arctostaphylus in our case. So how are we going to do this? So what we did is we extracted DNA from the 29 accessions, which represented six sections of Vaccinium. We resequenced these genomes using Illumina paired-end sequencing, using W8520, which is our Vaccinium cesariense, as a reference. And this W8520 was constructed via PacBio sequencing and Hi-C technologies. So we use this resequencing data for SNP marker discovery within and between different Vaccinium groups. So steps are very simple but long. Create the library, generate paired-end reads, trim those reads, and map those reads to the reference. So here we have the genome of Vaccinium cesariense, which is our reference genome. And this is just indicating all the scaffolds that we put together here. There's about 349 scaffolds. Not all are seen here, but the most important are seen right here in the middle. And these are the 12 biggest scaffolds, which are each bigger than 45 megabases. And these represent the 12 chromosomes that are actually found in our reference genome. Okay, so once we did that, after we mapped the reads to the reference, we generated BAM files and pileup files using SAM tools. We got our merge file together, and then did SNP calling using an in-house pipeline that we've developed in our lab. So the next thing, so once we got the results, we. So when we have the results, we're going to, I'm basically going to tell you what we have here. So we used a few different parameters. So this one right here, I'm going to spend more time with. This is the one that is a little bit more rigorous. So we used a minimum coverage depth of 20 and a maximum coverage depth of 1,000. And we called SNPs using two different methods. This one I'll talk about, the two genotypes, when two genotypes were homozygous and opposite. So here is the data that we have here. Let me show you what I mean. So here's our reference base here, which is G. Now, if we look at our first genotype, which in this case would be Vaccinium angustifolium, we see that its reference, its base is G. Now, if you look here at the second genotype, Arboreum, it's A. So we would call this a SNP in this case. So, in summary, we have successfully resequenced and mapped all of our 29 accessions to the W8520 reference. We have successfully done SNP calling performed on all 29 accessions, and I have about 13 million SNPs called. So this is a lot, and this is when we were using the four genotypes that were homozygous and opposite. So example, if we had two C's and the other two genotypes, two T's. And this was using a maximum depth of 20 and minimum depth of 20 and a maximum depth of 1,000. So for future directions, now that we have generated these 13 million SNPs, the next step is to narrow that down a lot, okay? So we are going to try to get only 10,000 SNPs of superior quality by narrowing down our data, getting rid of missing data, things of this nature, and things that have very high coverage. So we're hoping that will narrow that number down a lot. Okay. And we would like to use these SNP markers to create a dendrogram in the future, something like this. Now, this is from a paper published by Bien and Ballington, and this is just an example of what we would like to do with our data. So, for example, if you look at this Sierra cultivar right here, you'll see three colors, red, green, and blue. And here, that represents that we have three different species in that background. So that is something that we would like to do in the future. In addition, we'd like to take the SNPs that we have and develop a better genotyping platform using sequence capture that we can use in other populations. And that is it. If there are any questions. Yes. Yeah, so that is something that I'm working on, we're going to be working on now. So we're going to start by getting rid of any missing data across the 29 accessions. So if, you know, this accession has this point, but this one has no coverage of anything, then we're going to just get rid of that. And also maybe do something that has like 100x coverage to, you know, kind of narrow it down that way. So that's the first step that we're going to try to do. Yeah. Yes.
This project specifically, probably a year.
No problem. I guess I have room for one more question, and if not, yes. Yeah, so we would like to get a sense of the background of our blueberry so that when we are developing cultivars, we can better understand what traits come from which what traits come from which accessions and what traits come from different wild and cultivated species. Because as it stands now, the cultivars that we have all this wild background and different types of cultivars introgressed into it. It's just going to help us get a better sense of what is coming from what and what traits belong to who, things of that nature. Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. So next